Good evening. Welcome to Speak Up Arkansas. This is Paul Kelly. I'm your host for today's show. There is a well-established evidence that public health outcomes are largely based on the social determinants of health. These include the conditions in which people are born, grow, live, work, and age. These circumstances are shaped by the distribution of money, power, and resources at global, national, and the local level. The social determinants of health are mostly responsible for health inequities, the unfair and unavoidable differences in health status seen within and between neighborhoods, cities, states, and countries. This well-established fact is the same for educational outcomes. In Arkansas, these same social determinants are largely responsible for the education achievement gap. This gap continues even with the increased investments in overall education spending, as well as millions spent specifically to reduce the achievement gap. The health and education outcomes of children should not depend on their zip code, where they were born, or where they go to school. Not in America, not in Arkansas, not if we expect children to thrive and prosper. The old adage that kids are our future, well, that depends on how we, as adults, respond to them now. That is the future. This evening, we invite you to be part of a conversation about what can be done to reduce or eliminate the education achievement gap in Arkansas. How do we avoid the social determinants and create a sustainable community? A community where our health, our economic well-being, and our workforce are prepared for the future. In the station, we'll begin this conversation, and this is, in fact, the same conversation we had last week, except for the fact that we hope that the electricity doesn't go out, because it doesn't seem to be storming outside today. So unless something else happens, if you've heard a little bit of this before, pretty soon you'll hear some other voices. But we have in the studio with us today some folks to help begin this conversation. We have Kathy Pillows Price, who's with the Home Visiting Network at Arkansas Children's Hospital. Welcome, Kathy.
Hi, everyone.
And we have Gina Dickey, who's an early childhood advocate in all kinds of different ways, and that I can't name right now, but I can tell you she knows what she's talking about, and it's fun to be around. Gina, thanks for being here.
It's good to be here.
All right. And then we have Angela Duran, who is the director of the Grade Level Reading Campaign. Angela's a longtime friend and advocate for children. Welcome, Angela.
Glad to be here.
We're expecting a visit from Ryan Davis, who's director of Children's International at UA Little Rock. And if he gets here, we'll bring him into the conversation a little later on then. So again, I want to remind you, this is a live show. You can call in at 501-433-0088, or you can email at speakupar@gmail.com with any questions or comments that you have, and we'll share that with our folks here on the panel. So we're going to start with Kathy Pillows Price with Home Visiting Network, because we're going to go sort of chronologically here. We're going to talk about the early years of childhood and then work our way up all the way through grammar school and then into high school. And what we're going to be talking about are some solutions, some actual things that work that we know by research. And actually, the legislative research group actually did a study about what would close the achievement gap, and all of that is sitting around the table right now. But we all know that it's been a struggle to bring these kind of services to folks, and there's a high demand for them, and not always as much as we need. But let's talk about the importance of what we know is successful and what your organization does to address that. Kathy, we'll start with you.
Okay. Well, as you said, I work for Arkansas Children's Hospital, and I direct the Arkansas Home Visiting Network. And home visiting is a service provided by qualified professionals within the home, and we visit parents that are pregnant or have children up to the age of five. All parents need support, and some don't have it readily available. Sometimes they need a little more help that can be provided in their community by parents and friends. And home visiting helps build stronger families and brighter futures by going in, assessing family needs, teaching and guiding families and parents, helping parents find support, and referring families to resources. We have a network of programs that we deliver in local communities that target vulnerable families with immediate needs. It gives parents the needed tools so they can be better parents for their children. We provide parents with a lot of resources, and home visiting is one of the ways that we see benefits brought back to our community.
Now, all of this is voluntary. This is
all of it's voluntary.
Right.
With home visiting, we improve the life for children, families, and communities. We help parents do a better job of taking responsibility for raising their children, and we support them in their basic parenting skills, health support, school readiness, and more. We can even help support families whose child is medically fragile or has medical challenges. Home visiting services give parents the tools they need to raise healthier, happier kids, and the impact has been powerful.
All right. Just got a text from Ryan. He's has a death in the family and is heading for Hot Springs. So I think we can talk about after school and summer programs. And when it comes to that, well, all of us all understand what everyone does to help children. So, all right. And the parent, if a parent is interested in learning more about this, so what kind of information or where would they go to find out more about home visiting?
The best place would be to access our website, and that is arhomevisiting.org.
All right. And that will list the services and the people in the community.
It will tell you all about the different programs we have, and then we have a search tool there where you can search by county to see what's available in your community.
You know, one of the reasons, I know I said this the last time, Howland, I just want to stress the importance of the neurological development, the brain development, the creation of neural pathways, hundreds of them a second occurring in small children from birth to the first to 1 year. Being able to make sure that the child is kept safe, is free of stress or whatever. If that happens and there isn't an intervention, the actual brain development will be slowed, and it can have long-term implications for doing it. I think the biggest problem, quite honestly, in the public's mind is there's no role for people in government to all of a sudden start walking into families' lives at the birth of a young child. But in this very mobile world we have, the availability of grandparents and other supports for people who may be having a child for the first time by themselves without any support is something we all need to be concerned about, and making sure that they do have the kind of support. You have to support the parent so the parent can then be in a position to take care of the child and know what needs to be done. But we can talk more about that, but I just want to stress how important that is. That's also the least expensive way to intervene effectively into the potential problems that children may face, particularly vulnerable children.
Absolutely. And it's one of the areas where the United States is behind, because in other countries, home visiting is universal and it's often offered to all parents. Supporting parents is an agenda item in other countries, where here, a lot of times we've decided it's something we shouldn't do, or it is too invasive or expensive.
It's every man and woman for themselves. We're all individuals, you know. It's all the cowboy on the range can take care of everything by himself. We don't need nobody, especially government, you know. But anyway, I that's absolutely right. And they also give full time or half time paid maternity leave for up to a year in some countries. And of course, that's called socialism, but it certainly indicates as being a successful method to go around taking care of kids.
Well, I always, when I talk about home visiting, I say one of the reasons I love these programs. I had my first child at 22. I had a degree in early childhood education. I had a lot of experience with children. I'd been a nanny, had babysat, had taught. I was married. I had a very supportive family. I had all the things in place that you need. And when the nurse came in and said I could take that baby home, I started crying and I said, "You can't make me leave. I don't know what to do with her."
Right.
And if I was that afraid and I had education, experience, and support, imagine if you don't have those things in place.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you for that. So, Gina, I know you are working at you're working with pre-K, and that starts at kindergarten, and sometimes I know HIPPE, which is part of what they do, is also sort of a precursor to the educational needs of kids. But talk about preschool. I know, quite honestly, the state has made some miraculous steps forward. It's kind of leveled off now, but talk about that.
You bet. I think preschool is kind of an alternative option for home visiting, either in lieu of or in addition to when parents need to go to work, or they're in school, either still in school or going back for an education so they can better support their families. Somebody's got to be watching the kids. So we've got an early education system in Arkansas that's pretty comprehensive, like it is in other states. It includes Head Start, Arkansas Better Chance programs. I'll come back and talk a little bit more about pre-K, but also for-profit, non-profit. We're kind of all one big umbrella, providing care for children full-time, part-time. And I think there's a couple of things that parents need to be really aware of, is that quality matters. Like you mentioned, Paul, the neurodevelopment that's going on in children's brains is really unparalleled any other time in their life than in those first 5 years. And one of the most important pieces that can be contribute to that is adult-child interaction, a lot of talking, a lot of singing, a lot of reading. And so one of the quality components parents should consider is the ratio of the number of adults to small children. And so one of the things we should be proud of in Arkansas is that we have a voluntary quality rating improvement system called Better Beginnings. And so that parents, regardless of the resources that you have, can look on the state's website and find out what the quality rating is of their program. As far as Arkansas Better Chance goes, that's really probably the thing, our shiniest star in our crown. We expanded the program from the 90s to $100 million during the 2000s, and so that we're able to serve children in communities all over the state. It's income eligible, so parents that are working and going to school but having a challenge paying for quality childcare or access to quality childcare. And I think it's really important if we think about those first 5 years as a foundation to a house. You know, you've already referenced that brain development. You can't build that house on a weak foundation. So we can send kids off to kindergarten that may be exceptional, but if you start 3 years behind your friends and we're only 5 years old, it's going to be hard to catch up.
Well, I also know that some parents and grandparents are sometimes skeptical about turning their 3 and 4 year old over to some strangers. And I know that oftentimes what has worked to help alter that is to have them come and visit a high quality preschool program so that they can see the interactions that are going on and the good thing that comes from that. It is important to have family support, and certainly we're not discounting the importance of having a family member take care of your child. But if in fact that is a part of what you do, but not the, it is important to recognize that how stimulating, how important it is for the social emotional development. I think you said this during the last time, if all you do is hang out with adults, you don't learn how to get along with kids. So there is some value in doing that. But what would you say to people who were hesitant about that?
I think you're right. You have to go see, because you want to be comfortable. This is the most important person in your life, probably. And so you don't want to just hand them over to anybody. You want to find a program that really welcomes parents into the program. They're welcome to come in at any time and observe and be an active part of the program. I think seeing children interact with a quality environment usually sell you on the idea, because even kind of piggybacking on Kathy's story about having formal education ourselves in this area, I remember when Marshall came home probably as a 2-year-old and wanted to ladle his own soup. And I'm thinking, well, that's just going to be a giant mess. And he did it. And it was apparent that his teacher had taught him how to do that. So I think sometimes we limit our children. We want them to stay babies a long time, yeah. Some of us. And so having that opportunity to work every day with educators who really understand that particular age group, what their skills are, and let them... They created an environment that allows for a lot of curiosity. There's a lot of things in our homes that can hurt little kids, and good quality programs provide an environment that's very safe and really encourages a lot of exploration, which is something that you can't do at home usually.
You're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. We're talking about the education achievement gap, something that's really important in Arkansas. We'd like for you to be a part of that conversation. You can give us a call at 501-433-0088. All of you who have raised kids or have advice for other folks, this is the time to get in on the conversation, and we'd welcome your comments and questions. It seems like the issue with pre-K is not, we've actually, I think the state of Arkansas has seen a increase or seen research that actually validates the ability of kids who have gone through high quality pre-K to overcome the limitations and the social determinants that often dictate that, and in fact are come to this. We do a measure of their preparedness for kindergarten, and that at least the last ones I saw were very positive that was having an impact. And some people have questioned whether that holds it impact for the long term, but they have to live a long time, and there are certainly national studies that show that quality pre-K works and has educational outcomes that are well worth the investment.
Absolutely. And in the state, we've had some gaps in some of the research findings that we've had, not the findings, but the actual just information to data. But you can talk to several school districts that have tracked their kids themselves internally, and without a question, they can tell you exactly that it's a return on that investment worth making. They can see how their kids are doing when they enter into the pre-K program. We use an assessment system that's very appropriate for that age group, four times through the year to see how they're doing, and the teacher knows them where to put some emphasis and can meet with parents and talk about any gap or issue they may be having that they can work on as a team. So they're really prepared when they get to kindergarten, more than their peers, that we know that for a fact. And if you look at the longitudinal data, at least by district, it says that they maintain that.
Right, right. All right. Well, let's move on to, I know you all go up to the eighth. What age does the grade level reading start and begin at or end at?
So our whole goal with the Arkansas Campaign for Grade Level Reading is that every child in Arkansas read on grade level by the end of third grade. And so the reason that we focused on third grade is that up until that point, children are learning how to read, and after that, everything is reading to learn. So if you don't have the basic reading fundamentals down by third grade, it impacts your math, your science, your social studies, and everything else. And what we know is that here in Arkansas, less than a third of our third graders are actually reading on grade level. And, you know, you were talking about the achievement gap, and what we know is that a child who is from a higher income family is twice as likely to be reading on grade level. So we definitely have a real achievement gap there. So we have identified five areas what the research says are really driving third grade reading. And we've already heard about two of those so far. And so the family engagement, the parent engagement with children from birth. So from day one, talking with them, helping to stimulate that brain and build their vocabularies is critical. As Gina was talking about, we can help close some of that gap with pre-K. We know that pre-K works. Then we also are really interested in what happens in the classroom between kindergarten and third grade. And so Governor Hutchinson earlier this year announced RISE Arkansas, which is an attempt to make sure that every kindergarten through third grade teacher actually knows how to teach children to read. And that seems like, well, of course, colleges of education teach that. But in reality, most students receiving a bachelor's degree to get an elementary teacher's license maybe get one or two classes on how to teach reading. So even though that's a fundamental part of what happens in the classroom, I think many teachers feel like they're not prepared to teach that. And then two other areas that we have focused on is attendance. And so it seems kind of obvious if you're not in the classroom, you can't learn. But a lot of times parents, you kind of lose track. And the reality, all you have to do is miss a class, a day or two a month, and that's considered chronically absent. And that really impacts your learning. And in today's world, you can't just make up missed days with a couple of worksheets. I mean, learning is hands-on and there are projects happening and that type of thing. And then the other area that we're really interested in is summer. And so if students don't have fun, engaging things to do during the summer, they actually fall behind. So when they go back in September, and a child that doesn't have fun, engaging summer activities can fall behind up to 3 years compared to their peers by fifth grade just because of what they missed in the summer.
Wow. Yeah, that learning loss over the summer, that continues through high school and that actually is a good segue into after school and summer programs, which, again, I want to remind listeners, this is a discussion about children, their education, and in particular, how we can go about ensuring that our children do not fall behind and are able, by the time they are grown, to function and thrive in a very competitive world that is fast changing. Believe me, their brains are storing as much as you've got in your brain as an adult, and it's coming in fast, at a very fast pace. I think I said this last time, that's why you never see those little babies blinking, because they're always keeping an eye and monitoring very closely what's going on. I love being stared at by little baby eyes, you know, because you feel like you can look into their soul. And then I wonder, they probably are figuring me out at the same time. But it's a wonderful, I just like being around little kids. I'm sorry. Okay, well, we actually, why don't we take a break here? I want to remind everybody to give us a call. We want you to be a part of this. We're going to take a short break. We'll come back and talk a little bit about after school and summer programs, and then you can share with us what your views are about childcare and how to make sure that all the children, you know, part of this really is, again, I go back to the beginning, we have to talk about the social determinants that, in fact, get in the way of kids being able to reach their full potential, and the need to have services to help intervene with that. We're going to take a break on World Tour. All right, a little tomate diabate to get our get us all calmed down and ready to start talking again about some very important issue, which is our children and their educational outcomes and some of the things that the research has shown. You know, go to where the facts are and find out what works. And part of that, again, this is a call-in show. We're talking about helping children thrive, and I'd love to hear from all the parents who can brag on their kids or talk about what they've learned. You know, I was the older brother. I had 10 younger siblings, so I was had to play parent from the time I was two. I had someone to take care of or at least look out for every so often. But even then, I don't know that I had a lot to learn because, as was stated earlier, once one comes and arrives at your door, it's a whole nother story about what you do and know about parenting. But I do want to talk a little bit about after school and summer programs. The reason this is as important is was referenced by Angela during her talks about summer reading, and that is, we know that after school and summer programs keeps children safe, it supports working families, and it often, very often, inspires children to learn. Youth who do not have the financial resources and the means to take, you know, it costs a lot of money to enroll in a soccer team, to buy the uniform, to travel to the practices and to the games. It takes a lot of resources to entertain children, to make sure that, you know, if they don't have anything to do, they'll find something to do. And if there are not positive opportunities, there will be other opportunities. And so it is critical that, I know when I was on the board of the city, we put into place after school and summer programs. And over the course of the next 4 years, the number of juveniles being arrested dropped 75%. That was just an example of the impact that after school and summer programs would have. And I know that I was a pretty rowdy kid in grammar school, and I'm one of those people who can't really sit down and just listen and learn. I've got to get up and move and go do something, and I learn far more by implementing and doing than I do by listening. I mean, not that I don't listen to all my professors. I finally figured out how to do that, but I know that I had to entertain myself in order to keep myself from getting into any more trouble. And I know that a lot of parents out there are wondering, well, what am I going to do with my 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old children during the summertime? And there's a good reason to be concerned if, in fact, there isn't, though aren't those kinds of services available. It doesn't, you know, I think in high school they say about five, and no matter how big your high school, only about 500 kids can fit into all the extracurricular activities that are there available for team sports, glee club, whatever else that the school offers. So that certainly something that is important to learn, but you can make a learning experience by a walk in the woods. You can make a learning experience out of making a cake and teaching them chemistry and what baking soda does. You can, my two children, one of them was a skateboarder and one of them was a pole vaulter. Well, when it came to understanding physics, they understood physics because they had lived it and figured out how to defy gravity. And so just doing things teaches you things that are very applicable to schools. And I think the best advice I ever got or have since given to other people is that find what it is that your children enjoy and then give them all of that they want to have. And that could be, and you won't know that until they've had perhaps some opportunities to experience that. So anybody else? I know you taught after school and summer programs. I know I hung out at the Boys Club, so I know that's something that kept me out of trouble. What did you learn from that experience, Kathy?
I learned that you need to give them a lot of opportunities and a lot of different choices. In our summer programs at BB, where I'm a school board member now, we do swimming lessons, we do theater productions, we do weekly field trips and give them lots of experiences beyond our town and our county. They have time to read, they have time to rest, they have time to socialize, and time to experiment and just figure out what it is they're good at and what they're interested in. Uh-huh. And it's an amazing program that's been replicated a lot throughout the years in our state. It started quite a few years ago.
Well, and this also, if schools or families or communities offer kids these kinds of opportunities, they will come. I remember back in my social work days at Granite Mountain, they had a small little recreation area there. And I would go there at 8 o'clock in the morning in the summertime. There'd be 50 kids. They couldn't even fit into that building, but they were all lined up, ready to go. All they needed was a basketball. All they needed was a baseball and bat. All they needed is some sort of activity, a bicycle, all of those things, music, a musical instrument. And, you know, we say that we want to hold our kids accountable for their actions, but you cannot hold kids accountable if they haven't had opportunities. If all their opportunities are negative or not so good, then how can you hold somebody accountable for how they behave and how they turn out if, in fact, they haven't got the opportunities? And it is incumbent on a community to provide those kinds of opportunities if they expect their children to thrive. It's part of the Parks and Recreation. It's part of the network of boys clubs, boys and girls clubs. It's part of the network. I know the city of Little Rock has after school and summer programs and summer jobs and those sorts of things. It's a real critical part of learning, and the more experience a child has, the more likely they are to find something that they can really relate to, and that allows parents then to help make that happen in any ways they think. Are there any parents out there who are struggling with that? You want to give us a call here at 501-433-0088. Angela, did you have something you wanted to add to your earlier comments or something?
Sure. I mean, I know as the mom of two little boys right now, and many of my mom friends, we're all figuring out how we're going to patch together summer care, and that can be a real challenge. So, but I know there's some really good resources of good summer programs here in the Central Arkansas area. I know the Boys and Girls Clubs have programs. Life Skills for Youth out in Southwest Little Rock has a fabulous program. Both of them are partnering with Our Kids Read here in Little Rock this summer around a reading program with Reading is Fundamental. And I believe children who participate in those programs will also get some books they can take home and build their home libraries, which is pretty exciting. Another terrific resource that we're so blessed to have here in Little Rock is the Central Arkansas Library System. And every year they have a summer reading program, and kids get incentives for reading and, you know, can kind of go in and get a little prize and things like that. I don't know what the theme is this year. I don't think it's been announced yet, but they always have some fun theme behind that.
Is that the children's library, or is it happening in all the sites?
In all of the, okay, the CAL sites, okay, so around the city.
Okay.
A couple other resources that I thought about were when Angela said piecing things together, I think, which is kind of an important thing to think about for school-aged mm-hmm. children. Kathy referenced that they need lots of choices. Right. So, you know, when we get bored, that's when we find things that are interesting for us to do. And, you know, be careful what your 12-year-old might get interested in. So I think keeping it a lot of variety. One resource that you can find online, Little Rock Families, the publication has an ultimate guide to summer camps and classes, and you can look by subject matter that your child's interested in. Paul mentioned that, right? Find the thing they're passionate about and help them get information about that. Some of those obviously have a cost to them, but you might be surprised that some of those resources also scholarship children,
right,
and the parents can inquire about that. And I mentioned our quality rating improvement system, Better Beginnings. The website for Better Beginnings is AR, as in Arkansas, betterbeginnings.com. You can find quality early education there, both after school and school age programs that are licensed through the state. But they also have some resources for families. And one of the resources they have, you can just search, put in the search box summer, and it'll pop up a summer childcare checklist. So when you're trying to decide where to go and if it's the right place to go, that might provide a little guidance for families.
Uh-huh. All right, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. We're talking about the education of our children and all the issues that go along with that. I know we just had a vote here in Little Rock on the school, and that was very controversial. And you know, we've got to get it all worked out, as the adults in the house have got to get it all worked out, because we've got to focus on the children. And in the child advocacy world, we say what usually gets in the way of what's good for kids is how it affects the adults. We adults have to take responsibility for that, not just for our own, but for the children of all the community. So we'd like to entertain any comments or questions. If you've got any wisdom or things you'd like to share with us and with the listening audience, please do give us a call at 501-433-0088. And I still have my computer here to take your, for those shy persons who don't want to be on the phone, you can email me at speakupar@gmail.com.
So one of the other things I wanted to make sure folks knew about is a campaign we're doing here in Little Rock called Talk, Read, Sing, Talking is Teaching. So if you have driven around in southwest or central Little Rock, you may have seen some billboards up. And there are these big billboards, and the whole concept behind them is really trying to develop vocabulary with young children, and realizing that even when they're 3 months old, 6 months old, as we were talking earlier, that brain is developing. And so words they hear you say are helping them develop words that will come out of their mouths in a couple of years. So, but as the mom of a baby, sometimes you're very tired and you feel like you're just talking to a wall. But we kind of lose creativity sometimes. So we have this whole campaign to kind of give parents ideas of things they can talk about with their children. So we are partnering with Kathy's program, the home visiting programs here in Central Arkansas, but also with WIC and with the Little Rock School District. And so if you are getting WIC, just talk to your nutritionist about what we're doing. And we've got a bag of goodies that you can take home and give you some ideas of ways you can talk with your children.
All right. Any other resources out there that folks, I would remind you, the community programs in the city of Little Rock, or they've probably already allocated the funds for the summer programs. You can go to the city site or call community programs. I know there was an article in there about all the kids are trying to put to work, because working is certainly a I mean, I had summer jobs, you know, it just seems so different to me now, because if there was a park, there was somebody there with all the tools, all the items you need to play with. I mean, the parks were staffed, and you could just walk into any park in the city of Little Rock, and if you wanted to play tennis or badminton, basketball, or you know, War Memorial swimming pool was $5 a summer for to go swimming every day from 9 until I think it closed even almost as long as the sun was up. So things are just a whole lot different now, and you have to look a little harder, and you have to have resources, and it is important to think too about just the implications for all this on our children. Give me a call, 501-433-0088. I would like to have your advice. You know, we've given you all we got here. We're waiting. Yeah. Gina.
I want to expand on something that you said earlier, Paul, about those everyday moments. And I think it's what you said about baking the cake and how it's really a chemistry experiment, and how Angela talked about the read sing program. I think whoever's listening, right, don't underestimate the influence you have, either as a parent, a grandparent, and a neighbor. I think the important adults in children's lives are really their primary teachers. So regardless of the education, we talked about the advantages to having a teacher with a child development degree and really understanding two-year-olds, but nobody understands the two-year-old more than their family. Right. So I think there's a lot of learning going on every day. And one thing that's very exciting about the program that Angela mentioned is it's reminding us as adults those opportunities, because the kids are taking it all in.
Right.
And just simply by having, you'll feel like a crazy person as you drive down the road with the child in the back seat strapped in, talking about what you're seeing and having that conversation, but there's probably nothing more significant you could do that day, right? So it's taking those everyday moments in the grocery store, explaining things, talking about colors and textures. So not to underestimate, as wonderful as the programs that we all have talked about here, that the most important teachers are the families and the adults that care about these kids.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. That's really important for us all to remember. And we do have opportunities not only with our own children, but children in the community at the grocery store that you run into. You've got to remember they are not, they are sponges. They are taking everything in. So anything you can offer is something that they will respond to. They'll give you immediate feedback. You can, again, know that they're listening. You know, one of my questions always has been, if we know all that is necessary in order to help these children thrive and succeed. Oh, we have a caller. Hang on. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, that's why I turn my radio down here. I just wanted to point out how important it is to maybe sometimes, I can do it by example. When I was a youngster, we had a little league team, but it was about 5 or 6 miles away, and I'd ride my bicycle down there to be on that little league team. And I just loved playing baseball. But now and again, they'd had what we call pony league, which followed little league. But when I got out of little league, there wasn't any adults willing to coach or to take the, you know, to teach us and set up, you know, a schedule and things like that for practices and kind of means to take us to games. So we didn't have anything like that. So, you know, ever since we all loved playing baseball, we all got together and we played baseball. Of course, we got tired of playing just amongst ourselves. So we found older siblings and people like that. Sometimes we hitchhiked down to set up a game with some of the people that were in organized leagues and things like that. But all it would have taken was just one adult who was interested. We had our gloves and our bats and our balls. We didn't need any. There was no money, you know, involved. Just to try to get a few adults to help with that. It would have been so important, because that something like that was touch and go. I mean, we weren't always able to, you know, to get a schedule a game because we weren't organized, and sometimes we just couldn't get enough transportation or something like that. But just something like that wouldn't take a lot of money or. You know, it takes some time, but it would be a good time. I think an adult would have rewards of feeling good about helping kids out like that. So I'm talking mainly probably like the rural areas and things, not the cities and things like that, but we're just not organized things. And it's important. It would be, and I look back on that, I remember how we did that. I was proud of what we did, but wished we would have had more organization so we could have played more and had more of being able to have more opportunities for us. And that's all I'm saying. I'll hang up now.
Well, thank you. We owe a lot to those individuals who step up and coach, who work with Boy Scout troops, who actually open up any kind of resources they may have to allow people to participate. And that's all part of recognizing, I think, that everybody's kids are our kids, and what is good for every child is what's going to make it good for the rest of us.
Paul, the caller brought up a great point too. We do need the volunteers that step up and coach and that help lead these teams. But he brought up like transportation. There are a lot of ways that you can volunteer that will help families and children out. My husband coaches, and he does it on a volunteer basis, but I definitely run a lot of children back and forth to those practices and their games, and I'm not capable of coaching.
Right.
But, you know, if everybody would just do a little bit.
Right, right.
It would help out.
Right. again, I think part of it is times have changed. People, you know, have moved far from family, and for people that they know, many people don't even know their neighbors. I imagine that churches are perhaps a place where people make social network connections, and that's certainly something to think about. But that's very important. And thank you, sir, for giving us a call and reminding me of that, too. I coached basketball with my kids. Anyway, okay, I'd love it. We still got some time. You can give us a call, 501-433-0088. I want to ask, why is it that with knowing all these facts about what works and what is actually needed and how it can be done, why is it that it's not there? What is it that keeps these kinds of programs from being operationalized? What is it? I mean, I know part of it is if it involves government, people don't want government in people's lives. So that isn't the role of government. It appears that people think government is to catch you if you're doing something wrong, but there's not really that much effort being put into what we can do to prevent people from getting into rough, hard times, kids in particular, that they're on their own, their parents are on their own, everybody's on their own. And, of course, we, all of us sitting around here, deal with legislators, and they saw the Bureau of Legislative Research study, and they looked at it, and they saw the facts, and we've had a bill called the Positive Youth Development Act that's been in effect since 2011, and we've been trying ever since to get just $5 million for the whole state to at least start something. I think the 21st Century Learning Centers that some schools have are the examples of after-school and summer programs, but again, we're talking about positive youth development, not on-your-own youth development.
Paul, there was one small victory on that topic during the legislative session, and so there is a pot of money that goes to schools, and it's particularly to serve children from lower-income families, and it's been a pretty broad use of what those funds can go for. It's called the NSLA pot of funds, and during this session, there was an increase in that pot, but they've limited it to pre-K, and summer and after school, and then tutoring. So, and the idea is things that are evidence-based, that are proven to really make a difference. And so that'll really, in some ways, be the first new pot of money for out-of-school time programs, which we're pretty excited about. So,
right. Well, thank you for pointing that out. I knew about that and remembered that. It wasn't a very large amount, and it was almost, my comment is, it's about time. But anyway, Gina.
Amen.
Well, I think that's a good example of we got to reprioritize some things. And I think that's a big question, Paul. That's one of those ones you have in the, you know, over a toddy somewhere, yeah, over a long period of time. But there's a couple of things. The history of education in this country, we start at 6 years old and we take you till you're 18. That's before we knew about the brain research, right? So it's expensive those first 5 years. You want a smaller child ratio, so it costs more than it would, say, in elementary school. We'd have to not do something. And I think that's something we should think about. In other countries, like we said, we have paid maternity leave, and we provide public pre-K for all children. We're about the only developed nation that doesn't do that, but we're going to have to shift a priority to that. And I think it's a matter of families asking for it. I think it goes back to the very first thing you said about the, you know, cowboy on the range and that level of independence, and that we've got to acknowledge as families we need a little help. We need help paying for this. You know, a childcare for two kids can cost more than your mortgage, and that's not okay. That's hard. So I think the public has to, yeah, make sure people understand it needs to be a priority.
Yeah, and it's a part of wanting everybody to work and everybody to make money so everybody can buy stuff. So if that's what our mission is, then this is what results from that, if that's all we're looking at, because that isn't really what it's all about, but that's certainly what appears to be what's driving a lot of things. I want to remind you all that in those times since when we don't have home visiting, we don't have pre-K, we don't have grade level reading, and we don't have after school and summer programs, then we're going to have a juvenile justice system, and that's coming up next on Speak Up Arkansas, and that is what is going on in the state's juvenile justice system. I know when I used to go to events, people would talk about health and pre-K and all these things, and I said, if you don't have any of that, then you've got a juvenile justice system, and that system is certainly the place where the children go whose community, school, government, and church has failed to take care of. That is where you'll find them, and we'll be talking about that population. Next Tuesday, we'll have Judge Wiley Branton here from here in Little Rock. We'll have the DYS Director, Betty Gooman, here, and we'll have Scott Tanner, who's the Juvenile Ombudsman here, and we'll be talking about that subject next week. Do you all have any closing comments to make, and any thoughts to wrap up?
Well, as you mentioned, the juvenile justice system, Gina brought up a while ago that, you know, it's a matter of looking at priorities. Yeah. And the return on investment for these early childhood programs is so great, not only in the impact that it has on children and families' lives, but also in the financial commitment in communities in our states. And that's one of the things we've really got to think about. It's less expensive, right, to do home visiting and pre-K than to do juvenile justice.
Well, that's a great closing thought. We're about to wrap up. Thank all of you very much, Angela, Gina, and Kathy, for spending your time here. And thank you, listeners, for making us part of your day. You're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. If you have any comments or questions or suggestions for other shows, you can email us at speakupar@gmail.com. Thank you, and we'll be back again next Wednesday at 5 o'clock.